transmitting sound. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
Welcome to another edition of the show. This week we speak with author and relationship coach Donna Marie Thompson on how to bounce back from a broken relationship. She has some amazing tips on how to acknowledge what happened, but then move forward in a positive direction with your life. We're also joined by renowned comedian Joey Elias talking about Charlie Sheen's stage tour and what it actually takes to put together a successful one-man show. I also weigh in on the importance of mothers, and we top things off with an exciting remix from Mary Mary and a song called Walking.
Capture your need for sound.
For the most part, it is never easy when your romantic relationship comes to an end. Whether you are the dumper or the dumpy, lots of emotions can run through your mind and body, and it can take a while to get over it, especially if you are very attached to your significant other. To give us some advice on how to get through this sometimes challenging journey is author of the book, How to Bounce Back from Relationship Breakup, and relationship coach, Donna Marie Thompson. Donna Marie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Kelly, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, first things first, Donna Marie, I guess I wanted to point out that whether you are the person ending the relationship or the other way around, it can be, you know, definitely painful for both, because sometimes, you know, even the dumper loves their mate very much and you know, probably wouldn't want to end things, but for whatever reasons, things aren't going well and they need to call it a day.
Well, absolutely. Relationships are very complex and multi-layered. And there's no quick fix and there's no simple solution. So whether you're the one leaving or the one that's being left, there's all sorts of feelings and lost memories and potential there. So there's pain all the way around.
Now, with the divorce rate, you know, being so high these days, I think a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of people are breaking up and probably breaking up in long-term relationships. What is the first suggestion that you would give for someone in the immediate hours and days following, you know, the breakup? Because to me, this is the danger zone time where, you know, you might do something crazy because you're in so much pain, like text them a million times, maybe leave them some sort of unpleasant message, you know, God forbid, dump all their clothes on the front lawn. Like, what do you tell people in those immediate days and hours following?
Well, the immediate response should be calm and withdrawn. You basically pull back into yourself and you do nothing. Make no contact, make no major decisions. Basically, try to pull into yourself and do some internal soul searching and some basic healing. So anything that you say or do out of anger or raw emotion is probably not a good thing. So the best thing to do is almost nothing and begin to circle in with like close friends or family and just divert yourself. If you have meditation practices, if you have a pet, if you have some other diversion, the best thing you could do is divert your attention so that you have time to process this in the back of your mind.
And something that has always concerned me, because I've had friends like this, you know, they were so attached to that person that when they broke up or when they were broken up with, they didn't have anything else. So even as like a person who might be in a very fine relationship right now, how important is it, Donna, to sort of have that independence in your life and have a life of your own?
Well, you hit the nail on the head, because that's exactly me. I had a 17-year relationship, and I worked like a maniac. So the only two things in my life were my man and my job. And then when he decided to go astray, I was left with nothing. And it's absolutely the most unnerving feeling on earth. So I would encourage anyone who's just basically that their world revolves around someone else, begin gently to join a club, go out to dinner with some friends, and just basically start some new interests on your own. Very gently. It doesn't need to be a dramatic thing that you do four nights a week, but begin to make connections. Because when I was left with nothing, we hung on for an extra year because I had no connections, and that was a very bad thing. So whatever you can do to fill out your life, round out your life, that's a great thing, even when things are going well in your relationship.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because, for example, I have a friend now, and you know, she's madly in love with her husband. They've been together since they were 18. I think they're around 27, 28 right now. She cannot go anywhere without him. Like, You know, if they go to dinner, he's going to be there. I mean, like, you know, randomly she will just go out with the girls, but everything revolves around their schedule and you know, how that sort of plays a part in her own life. And my fear for her, and it's not that I'm trying to be morbid or anything, but like, you know, let's say they do make it to 60 or 70 years old, or even, God forbid, let's say something happens to him in a car accident or whatever. I don't think she could function without him. So like you said, even if things are going well, it's not good to be entirely wrapped up in another person's life.
Absolutely. Okay, there's three pieces of a couple. There's you, your mate, and the relationship. And those are three separate entities. And all three of them need to be healthy separately to make it all work better. So it's very difficult when things are going great to say, oh, you should diversify. But believe me, if you wait too long, it's not good. And you're also missing a lot of different perspectives. I was a couple. I was together 21 years. But the first 17 were fantastic. And we walked alike, we talked alike, we said everything at the same time. And we basically morphed into the same person. Well, that's not quite good. So if you actually expand your horizon and even go to happy hour, something simple, an hour, you basically get different insights, different perspectives. It refreshes. It energizes you.
Now, going back to sort of the immediate aftershock of the breakup in the days and sort of hours following, how long before you can start to think rationally again? Because, you know, I've been there where it just seems like this roller coaster of emotion is going on. And like you know, within the first day or so, you're trying to be like, well, I'm going to be okay. And I'm going to join a gym or like what, and you're sort of doing all these things. Like, how long before you should really pull back and just, you know, sort of stay calm and make sound decisions and not these decisions based on you being in supreme emotional pain?
Well, everyone's different, but it sounds like for most people that I'm talking to, the first 2 weeks are very raw, and that's when most of the mistakes where you've seen the song, like, I need you now. I promise not to call, but I need you now. So those are the raw reaction emotions, and it happens within the first 2 weeks. And you'll know your triggers, whether being alone on a Saturday night or some special day, or we used to do things on Thursdays. Those are the times, if you could substitute activities, you can get yourself through those specific times. But after the first 2 weeks, I think your emotions settle down to be less raw, and you begin to see a little bit clearly. But some people can take a month up to 3 months, basically going back and forth. And I always counsel my people, it could be two steps forward, one step back. It's not this, you know, trajectory like a, you know, a hockey stick graph. You don't just bolt out of, you know, a relationship breakup. It's a process. So give yourself some time, some patience. And I suggest that the women do something nice for themselves, and the guys just get involved in sports or just do something. And it really, really helps to divert your mind.
And Donna Marie, I guess a question that would come to mind is, you know, after those first 2 weeks, like you said, of raw emotion, which I think all of us go through again, those first 14 days, do you let, like, once you start to calm down, because I think you do start to feel your body sort of relax a little and just sort of, you know, even if you're still very upset, but there's a moment where you're just sort of, you can feel a little bit of the air rushing out of you and it's okay. Is that when you let the emotions start to come? Because it's almost like, do you let your body just sort of bring the emotions and the memories to you, or do you actually have to actively try to process and maybe journalize and stuff like that?
Well, I guess different people take different approaches, but your emotions are in there whether you like them or not, and they're going to come out whether you want them to or not. So it's a matter of whether you take control. And one of the things I do in my 5Es is we talk about explore what happened, and people write 20 pages of, oh, you did this and they did that and we said this and they said that, and it basically gets a diary of all the stuff, and as soon as you unload that, your brain can move on to something else. So I like, it's just my personality, but I like to take a constructive approach and begin to take charge. But it's fine to cry, it's fine to grieve, it's fine to process those emotions. What I'm guarding against is saying and doing things based on those emotions. So you can't hide it, you can't, you know, put those emotions down, but just don't act on them. So begin to explore inside what happened, and that'll really help you get clear.
Joining us on the show is author of the book, How to Bounce Back from Relationship Breakup, and relationship coach, Donna Marie Thompson. Make sure to check her out at bouncingbacknow.com. Donna Marie, you mentioned sort of just a few seconds ago your five E's of recovery. What are they?
Well, the first E we talked about is explore what happened. Get down on paper. It unloads all of your brain to put it down and say, my assumptions, these are my beliefs, and this is what happened. So that's the first one. The second is eliminate unwanted feelings. You'll discover that you have the power to change your feelings. If I call you and say, my car's wrecked, please come pick me up, that's one emotion. But I could call you in the next minute and say, I've been invited to a party, come with me. You can change your feelings in a matter of 10 seconds. So eliminating unwanted feelings is within your power. The third is where you begin to get more stable and you embrace the situation. You probably heard the saying, what is, is. And once you accept that, that sets the foundation for your recovery. The fourth, you're looking forward. Envision your future. Things have changed. Things will never be the same. The future will be different based on what your breakup, but it will be a new future, and you're in the driver's seat. And the fifth is energize your world. You'll begin to hit your stride as you plan your new future. And what the key element there is, you reach back and try to help someone else. You look outside yourself, and then you know you're way forward on your healing process.
Now, two women who went through highly publicized scandals and sort of subsequent breakups with their men in the last, year to 18 months are Sandra Bullock and Elin Woods. What are your thoughts on how they handled their painful situations? Because I think, even though they are public figures, what they went through is very common to us normal folk.
Yes, it's common, but it's also very visible. Most of our breakups happen in dark corners. This is publicized all over the place, so they've got extra baggage to deal with. But one of the things that they've done is, rather than deeply questioning their own worth and their own value and their own actions and what they did wrong, what they're doing, they had a mate that their behavior was clearly out of line. They didn't bring it back on themselves. They realized that their partner misbehaved. And so it's about them. It's not about you. The people that don't do well in breakups pull it all back on themselves. If only I could have done this. If only I said that. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not handsome enough. I'm not this. I'm not that. So rather than pulling it all back on yourself, you figure out what happened, and especially if there's clearly violations such as cheating, it's really about them. And so you don't take all that extra baggage on. And I think those are what the successful people do, is say, I did what I could. They made a different choice.
And then what are your thoughts on, for example, someone like Jennifer Aniston, who has also gone through some highly publicized breakups? The first one, I think, that everyone was shocked about was with Brad Pitt. And it just looked like she was very shocked that it happened to her.
Yes, well, I'm really not sure about some of the things that are going on, but it looks to me from what I've read that she seems to be spinning and rethinking about times back with Brad. That's long over. He's been married for years and years now. So any inclination to talk about your past relationship and moving forward is basically what's holding her back. She is an individual. She's a very talented and beautiful woman. But what is at her control is the present and the future. No one can change that past. No, whatever you do, it's not going to change. So the way to get through this is to learn your lessons and move forward. That's the only way to a cure.
And a question I would have, I think, in regards to Jennifer, and even something that you mentioned about your own relationship earlier, Donna Marie, was you'd mentioned that the man that you were with, you guys would finish each other's sentences, and it was like this very deep connection. So what happens if that type of situation doesn't work out for whatever reason, like, lying, cheating, whatever it is. So you can't be with that person anymore. So you end it, you move forward, you take the necessary steps to sort of cut them out of your life and to move forward. And you're trying to do that. And you don't, jump back into another relationship. You take your time. But what happens if years down the line, and maybe even after you've had another relationship or two, there's still these lingering feelings because you've never met a person like that first person who, you finished each other's sentences and you could just connect so well. Like, how do you get through that?
Well, that what you had, what I thought I had, and what I guess I did have for 17 years out of the 21, was a true soulmate. And what I've come to realize is that was a very precious 17 years. And even if I never, ever have anything like that again, I've now gotten to the point where I have gratitude that I was able to have that. And I've talked to many, many people, and they've never had it. So my 17 years, even though it was a disaster in the end, really has given me some wonderful life experiences. So you basically take life as it comes. There's no promises. We're all hopeful. I'm very optimistic that my next soulmate is just waiting for me when I'm ready for him. But basically, appreciate what you had and be optimistic that maybe it will come again, and just live your life. So the key goal is to just be happy and healthy, either as a single or as part of a couple. You are a complete being. You are 100% just the way you are. So go out, have fun, do things, live your life, and when that right person comes along, then there you go. But to pine away and look backward, unless you're looking back fondly over your memories, it's really not constructive. It's not in your best interest.
But what happens if those feelings just sort of come up on their own and you don't really mean for them to be there? Like that they that it is a lingering feeling, and maybe the person that you're with right now isn't, you're not connecting on that level, but that you still love them very much. Like, it just seems like it's hard to get through that and move forward.
Well, the feelings will come, but now I view them with appreciation. I actually smile. We used to go to baseball games, and if I see different things, and I see a baseball game, I'll smile. And I'm cherishing my memories. It's almost like after a death. I've lost my mother as well. And there were times that are very painful, but I've turned them into, wow, wasn't it a wonderful day that we spent, you know, antiquing? Wasn't it a wonderful thing? So let those feelings come, but twist the way you perceive them and be grateful for the wonderful memories. It's basically a way to heal, because there's very few things that you have control of. You have control of your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions, and your words. Everything else is basically going to happen to you and around you. And in order to survive and just basically live a healthy life, you understand what's going on. But bringing that gratitude in and just that the warm perception of the gratitude of your relationship and the gratitude of everything else that's positive in your life. So you don't look at what's missing. You look at, wow, what a beautiful world. Look at this tree. Look at the birds. I've got pets. I've got grandkids. I've got friends. And basically enjoy what you have rather than focusing on what you don't have.
And Donna Marie, where can people get a copy of your book? Because I know that it will be completely helpful for people going through this situation.
Well, great. I have autographed books with custom bookmarks available at bouncingbackfromloss.com.
Fantastic. Donna Marie, you've been awesome. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
That's author of the book, How to Bounce Back from Relationship Breakup, and relationship coach, Donna Marie Thompson. Make sure to check her out, bouncingbacknow.com.
The Kelly Alexander Show. Capture your need for sound.
It has been a very busy week in the world of entertainment. Check this out.
Okay. To Regis, from a hopeless romantic, he calls himself. Oh. Regis, I need your help. I love my girlfriend, and I want to propose, but I'm not sure how to ask her. I really want to do something romantic and special. Do you have any suggestions? Well, first of all, you've got to get her in the mood, you know.
You
dim the lights. You can't have the bright lights. Mm-hmm. Got to dim the lights. And then it would help if you had a little romantic music playing, because usually they love that.
Uh-oh.
And then it helps if you have some flowers to present to her, you know, like red roses here. And after that, pal, all you need is the ring.
Struggle to find the words to express what you mean to me. You're an inspiration. You're beautiful. You're wonderful. You're everything to me. Will you marry me?
Whoa!
Yes, I will marry you.
Talk about scary situations. A Southwest Airlines jet made an emergency landing after a small explosion in the cabin. A 3 to 4 foot hole could be seen by the passengers in the passenger cabin.
My husband and I looked up. You could see blue sky. You could see the wiring, the cabling. Everything. It was actually terrifying.
Sunday was another frustrating day for workers in Japan trying to plug a leak at a crippled nuclear power plant. They poured a chemical compound mixed with sawdust and newspaper into the gap, but it hasn't stopped radioactive water from leaking into the Pacific Ocean.
And the ACM album of the year goes to Need You Now, Lady Annabella!
Thank you, Miranda Lambert, for winning this last year and not being in the category this year. That really helps a lot.
Charlie Sheen's big tour started this weekend. Did you all follow this? It's an incredible story. Yeah, it's been reported that during Charlie Sheen's live show in Detroit, hundreds of people walked out of the theater. Walked out! I know. I was thinking about it. You know your show's in trouble when people would rather take their chances on the streets of Detroit. While the crowd was booing during his show in Detroit, Charlie Sheen told them, "I've got your money." Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Then three strippers stood up and yelled, "Not for long."
President Obama has made it official in emails to supporters and in a video on his website, BarackObama.com. The president announced he filed papers to run for re-election next year.
Officials at the earthquake-damaged Fukushima nuclear plant started dumping tons of radioactive water into the Pacific.
They say they have to do this. It's regrettable. They don't like doing it, but they have to make space.
Tokyo Electric Power says the leak of contaminated water into the Pacific Ocean has stopped. Crews plugged the leak with a polymer material called liquid glass.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
One of the coolest jobs in the world, but probably one of the hardest, is making people laugh on a daily basis. It takes a special person to stand up on stage, put themselves on the line, and be funny. One of the best at this challenging craft is comedian Joey Elias. Joey, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
It is good to be back.
Joey, now, I've had you, you know, on my show before telling us how you became, you know, a stand-up comedian, which is obviously a very difficult career path. Now, I'm happy to have you on the show again, and this time around, I wanted to talk to you about what's been going on with the Charlie Sheen saga and then his current stage tour, because there's some specific technical stuff I wanted to sort of ask you about that. But before we actually talk about his stage show, I know that you know a lot of people in Los Angeles because you've had to, you know, work down there and do a lot of that sort of stuff. Do you know Charlie personally, or have you ever met him?
I have not. All I know about him is what everybody else knows about him, is that, you know, he's a talented actor that comes from a very talented family. And somewhere along the line, he just lost it a little bit.
Now, in your opinion, as a paid entertainer, has Charlie, you know, been very smart or very stupid with his actions, you know, over the past 3 or 4 months? Because I guess the question is, you know, will he ever really and truly work again in Hollywood? Because it feels like no network or major film studio, at least right now, wants anything to do with him.
Well, you know, give him credit. He's got enough money in the bank to last him a lifetime. So I guess in his, you know, in his mind, he can do whatever he wants. He can control his own fate. He's got enough money that if he wanted to produce a movie and release it, he could. I mean, there were rumors that the head of CBS, after all the stuff that Charlie Sheen was saying publicly about his co-stars in the network, CBS executives went and tried to woo him back, because they realize that this is just a huge cash cow for them, this Three and a Half Men, or Two and a Half Men, whatever it is. I've never seen it. But they just can't afford to lose that that franchise. And unfortunately, you know, I've been talking to people, and it's almost like a car wreck, is that they want the show to come back with him because they're so interested in seeing, how's it going to play out? Are they going to write this? Because he essentially plays himself on the show, is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, are they going to write this in where, you know, Charlie's character has a bit of a, you know, a mental lapse and starts slamming everybody and then makes nice at the end? So, I mean, the only, you know, person that I've read that has supported him is the actor that plays his mother on the show. Everybody else has kind of been like, well, Charlie, what are you doing? You know, you're costing me work. You're costing me money. He did have that saving thing where he decided he was going to pay the crew
right
out of his own pocket. In terms of, you know, winning over fans for that, I think that was a great thing to do in terms of, okay, I may look a little shady, and yeah, I'm partying with porn stars, and apparently I'm going out on booze and drug binges, but you know what? I'm going to make sure that nobody who's a father or a mother is losing out their money. So in terms of image-wise, that was a good PR move.
And in your opinion, though, as, again, as someone who has worked in the business, you know, you've been on shows, you've been on commercials, again, with your own stand-up, you know how important it is to have the support of your co-stars. The fact that he called out John Cryer and called him a troll, that's, you know, the actor that plays his brother on his show, there was no reason for him to attack John Cryer. Do you think that other people in Hollywood, like other Hollywood stars, you know, that was like a final straw for them? Because it's one thing when he's ranting and raving about the powers that be, because I think a lot of people secretly probably admired him for doing that. But like when he called out a fellow actor, what does that say?
Well, unless there's something behind the scenes that we don't know about, you know, maybe he did get a phone call from Cryer, Cryer's people. But John Cryer, to me, just seems like a decent guy. You know, so I don't know if anybody really wants to associate themselves with somebody who, as soon as they're unhappy, goes very public, you know, and it's not just to, you know, your spouse or whoever you're hanging with. It's the world. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be on television anytime soon, unless, of course, you know, he makes these cameo appearances. I know he jumped on Jimmy Kimmel the other night, selling some swag, you know, the T-shirts that just say winning, you know, Tiger's blood, stuff like that. But other than that, I mean, do I really want to watch him in a sitcom anymore? Not really. Not really. First of all, he doesn't even look healthy.
Right.
You know, that was the one thing I noticed, is that he looks just haggard. I wonder how much sleep this guy's getting. And that's how I know I'm getting older, because all of a sudden it's not about, my concern's not about him spending money on, you know, hookers and drugs and booze. It's like, Charlie, are you, just get some sleep.
Right.
You know, that's how I know I'm getting older. Like, just take care of yourself.
Hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show right now is comedian Joey Elias. Make sure you check him out, www.joeyelias.com. Now, Joey, again, someone in your field who has to get up on stage and plan out your act and sort of, you know, really from beginning to end, and the fact that you have to entertain crowds for a significant amount of time, something that really angered me, and I'm not even in your profession, but I guess, you know, I am a radio announcer, so I know that you have to, you know, have material to keep your crowd listening, your audience listening. What is
the difference between your show and mine, by the way?
That I prepare and you like to wing it?
Yeah, I just walk in. What's on the docket? And then we go.
But a question like, and again, as someone like you who has to get up on stage, and I know you have friends that do what you do, does it anger you that he just, you know, decided he was going to have the stage tour? Now, I know he's not trying to be a comedian, but he's basically doing this one-man show, and his opening night in Detroit was a debacle from all accounts, people walking out, booing him. I know he turned things around for the second night in Chicago, but from what I understand, it's really turned into this almost question and answer situation. So it's not like he's really presenting a lot of material. It's him answering questions. What do you feel like when you see this Yahoo who's just decided, I'm going to go charge $300 for people to watch me talk about nothing and warlocks and winning?
Well, if he, you know, presented it as an evening with Charlie Sheen and I'll be taking your questions and answers and that's all it is, great. Then I have no beef with it. I really don't have a beef with him doing it. I'm assuming because of the money he has that, if I were him, I would have gone down to any of the comedy clubs in LA and just said, okay, hey guys, I think you're very funny. I'm about to go on tour and I need, you know, I want to do about 90 minutes. I need 60 minutes of topical stuff I can talk about and have them write it. Obviously he's an actor, so he can rehearse it. And then the other half hour, he can go off on whatever, you know, has possessed him that day. So if it's, you know, whatever warlock or animal blood that he has in him that particular moment, great. I know he brings out his two girlfriends, is mm-hmm. that right?
Yeah, the goddesses.
Yeah, that's it. So, you know, he can bring and talk to them or whatever, but I would have done that. And because here's the thing, you ask any successful comedian and, you know, take Jerry Seinfeld, for instance, it starts with 7 minutes. And once you get that good 7 minutes, then you go to 10 and then 15 and then 20. But that 20, you know, it'll take somebody a good 2 to 3 years to really have a solid headlining set, which is 45 minutes.
Wow.
So for this guy, just in, you know, the span of 4.5 weeks to be like, I'm going on tour. And then, you know, I'm not surprised that he got booed the first night. Not booed, but, you know, it didn't go well. I think he didn't know what to expect. He just thought, yeah, people are going to show up. They're going to pay money because I'm me.
Right. And Joey, and, you know, you teach a class, you know, to for comedians and to learn the craft. And from that aspect, from you being a teacher, when you look at what he's doing, again, the fact that he only took about 4 weeks to put this together. And then, you know, I know it doesn't anger you, and I know that you're a calm guy, so maybe that's why I'm angry for you. But like, but like some of your colleagues down in Los Angeles, New York, are they just shaking their heads?
Oh, I'm sure there are people that are. You know, again, people that are in the comedy clubs and in the trenches doing the one-nighters, what we like to call the hell gigs every night. I mean, we'd love to play to sold-out theaters where people are just paying anywhere from $75 to $150 a ticket, you know, and everything goes into our pockets. So absolutely people must be, you know, just, well, what am I working so hard for? Clearly all I need to do is get on TMZ, act like a lunatic, and then people will want to come see me because who knows? Maybe it's, you know, it's almost like the zoo. I think that's what the Charlie Sheen infatuation is like we all go to the zoo, and even though the lion is just sitting there doing nothing on the rock, we sit and stare at it for an hour, hoping it's going to roar or, you know, it's going to attack some other individual that comes by because we don't know when it's going to snap. And I think that's the Charlie Sheen infatuation, is that we sit there watching him do nothing, but we just don't know when he's going to snap for the last time. Yeah. That's the fun part. Let's be honest. When he totally loses it, I'd love to see that.
I think you're right. I think a lot of people would too. And, you know, I know it's different from, for example, what you do where you get on stage and you do the comedy for X amount of minutes or, you know, past the half hour mark. For someone like, you know, Charlie, who is trying to do, I think, someone like, because John Leguizamo had his one-man show for a while years ago. And I remember Bea Arthur had her show that was going around. When you are trying to put together, you know, for lack of a better word, a one-man show, that takes hours and hours and hours and months, I would think, of preparations to just do that, though.
Absolutely. I mean, for myself, I say we because there's a team of us that are putting this together. I mean, I'm writing it, but there's a director and there's management involved. And I mean, we already have a one-man show plan that I'm in the process of writing that we are only going to, you know, debut next April.
So a year from now?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and in that time frame, what I'm doing is I'm writing 10-minute increments. And what I'll do is I will go out to various comedy clubs and make sure that I'm satisfied with that, you know, that 10 minutes. And then I'll tweak it so that it works or is to my liking. And then once I have 10 minute segments, I'll go out somewhere secretly and try it. And then we'll debut it somewhere in April here in Montreal.
Well, I'm glad that you have explained, you know, how this process works because, and again, I'm not what you do, but I am a radio announcer, again, as I mentioned, and, you know, we have to do, as we call it, show prep, you know, because every day we're on the air and we have to come up with something intriguing to say for the X amount of hours that we're on the air. So I understand in small increments what you guys have to go out and do, you know, like this one-man show. So I appreciate you sort of explaining everything because I think that was what has bothered me with this stage show that he's doing. It's that it just seems like he slapped it together. And like you said earlier, was hoping to capitalize on his fame and that people were just going to care that he was on stage yapping about nothing. And obviously in Detroit, that didn't matter. I know he changed things around for Chicago. And from what I understand, he actually brought in someone who has been involved in radio and writing scripts and helped him sort of devise the Q&A, I guess, platform so that it takes the pressure off him coming up with stuff to say. So I appreciate that. And I want to ask you, the one-man show, I know you probably don't have a lot to discuss with us yet on that, but what's coming up for you this summer? Any Just for Laughs news for us?
You know, it's still early, so I have no idea. I know that if anybody's listening online and they're in Sudbury, I'll be up there at the end of May for the Laugh Out Loud Sudbury Comedy Festival. I got, I think, 3 or 4 shows up there, and just all over the, you know, just doing the radio on CJAD, and then on the weekends bouncing around the country doing stand-up. So,
and I know
there's no rest for me.
There's no rest for you. And I know, because you are bouncing around all over the place, is there any comedians that we should be on the lookout for, Joe?
Well, Tommy Tiernan coming to Montreal, which is great, as is Bill Maher, who's fantastic. He's coming in September. And then, you know, just the local comedy clubs are the greatest. And I know people go, well, I have it on my computer, or I have it on my television. But there's nothing better than being, you know, in a venue and seeing everything live. So, you know, and there's always those hidden gems. You know, Montreal's a great hotbed for local stand-ups, and as is Toronto. I mean, Toronto's got some great clubs. Believe it or not, the comedy scene in Ottawa is fantastic. Absolute Comedy is just great. I mean, good luck getting a ticket. Honestly, it's sold out 7 nights a week.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, thank you for that. And I guess the last question to leave you with, and to leave my audience with, just back to Charlie Sheen for just a second. Do you think, I guess it's a two-part question, do you think that his stage tour will actually run its course and not sort of, you know, him have to abandon it? And then I guess the second part of the question is, do you think the success or failure of this stage tour will determine if he will maybe get a second chance in Hollywood, or third or fourth, because it seems like he's blown things numerous times before?
Well, Hollywood loves those comeback kids, right? Plus, he also has a powerful family name. So I think that may get him back into Hollywood. But I'll tell you this, this is what I think, is that if this tour ends up doing better and better and better in terms of his performance, I would not be surprised that if Charlie Sheen himself records one or two of them and releases this as a DVD, and again will make boatloads of cash, because people will, you know, all the cities that didn't see it and they want to see what happened, and they want to see, did he deserve getting booed, or is it as bad as people say? They'll go out and they'll get this, whether it's in a store or on his website or something like that. I mean, his online show, I don't know if you saw that.
I knew of it, and I heard it was not great.
It was, I mean, it was just a disaster. And yet, it was getting millions and millions of hits. You know, so again, I don't know if it's just, does it say something about us that we keep going back to something that's so bad? You know, I know that when I got my dog, I wanted to see what I was feeding her. So I actually tasted one of the dog snacks. And I'm sure, I mean, she still eats them. They were absolute, you know, they were gross for me. And I didn't go back, and I've never tried it again. It's not, oh, maybe I didn't pick the right color. No, it was horrible, you know. So that's, I don't understand why people just keep going back and watching this. It's just it's a very bizarre scenario of, you know, we just love, I guess it's, you know, that whole reality TV mentality. We want to see people fail or get dumped or, you know, jump off a cliff or whatever, whatever. It to me, it's mind-boggling. You know, I'd rather watch somebody who's entertaining walking, you know, if I'm going to pay that kind of money, I want to walk out of a theater and go, that was amazing. I wish you know, or she would have done an extra X amount of time, or I wish that movie was longer. I don't want to walk out going, wow, that was ridiculous. What was that?
Right, right. I think you make a great point. Joey, thank you so much for joining us on the show again. I really appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
That's comedian Joey Elias hanging out with us on The Kelly Alexander Show. Again, make sure to check him out, www.joeyelias.com.
Montreal's own Joey Elias.
Nice to be here. Nice to be back in Montreal. Home sweet home. Yeah. Every time I come back, though, I forget that I don't speak French. Yeah. You think I'd remember. You know, I know enough to get by. Like, I know oui, non, well, because I vote. I know enough to get by. Like, I know bonjour. Salut, bye. Combien pour la danse? I know that one. Just the stuff I use every day. The only French I really know is I call it Saint Leonard French. You know? And whether you're Italian or not, you've run into one of these guys, I promise you. You know, just walking the streets. They're the guys that came from Italy, obviously, 20, 30 years ago. They don't speak English, they do speak French, but they still have that accent. You ever hear them? Hey! A porco che non mangia pa', eh? Eh, vieni ici, on va fumer la cigarette après avoir coupé la gazon. You're laughing, I'm gonna get shot. And I love television, because you can tell by looking at me, I watch a lot, because the gym, obviously, not an option. I went once, I pulled something, to hell with it, I'm not going back, you know. Would have been nice if they oiled the door, I'll tell you that. You look like an idiot. Recently had like a little family get-together. That's always fun. Usually it's just, you know, 10, 12 of us. This time my cousin found out every relative in the phone book that he could find invited them over. So 53 of us. And the whole purpose was he wanted to introduce his new fiance to the entire family at once for the very first time. Brave or stupid, I don't know, but he did it, you know. Having met her, I have to tell you, she's a lovely, lovely woman. However, she told us that she was a vegan. I had no idea what this was. I'm like, a what? She's like, I'm a vegetarian to the next level. I'm like, wow, are you in deep trouble, sister? Our family thinks veal is a vegetable. We're pretty sure it rubbed up against the carrot as it frolicked through the garden. So now she's all mad. She's educating me. Well, vegans, we don't eat any meat. No fish, no eggs, no poultry. All we eat is organically grown fruits and vegetables and wheat. Here's the kicker. She's bigger than me. I didn't want to be rude. What do you say? I'm like, look, how much wheat are you eating? Hey, you don't have to eat it directly from the field. I mean, you're leaving the circles. You're scaring the crap out of the farmers. Folks, thanks again. Have a good night.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
So it's been a little while since you and I have talked about or have heard from Mommy Alexander. And she will be on the show in the next couple of weeks, but she's been very busy. She's a very busy woman. And so it's hard to sort of get her in one place and actually have a little chit chat with her. But I wanted to bring her up, you know, today on the show because of a couple of reasons. First of all, I know that we haven't sort of given you a health update in a while. And I know that if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer back in 2009, August of 2009. And she had to go through many months of uncertainty and operations, the third one of which involved her having to undergo a mastectomy. So, you know, we've been through all of that. She's told you about that herself in her own words. And currently, you know, we still have her health checkups that we have to do every couple of months to make sure everything's going well. She's on certain medication right now to deal with some hormonal stuff with regards to estrogen levels and all that. So she has to be sort of monitored quite closely. She's also in a study to see how she responds to this medication. So, you know, even though we are, you know, luckily sort of through those stressful times that we went through, you know, early on in the diagnosis, you know, she still sort of has to monitor everything and be on top of everything. But so far, so good. Everything's going very well. She's super positive. And I think one of the things or one of the main things that she's taken away from this situation is that I find she lets a lot of things sort of roll off her back. She doesn't seem to be as stressed or as worried about certain things. It's just sort of now, you know what? It's happening. I'm dealing with it. On we go. So it's been awesome to see my mom take away something positive from such a stressful and very scary situation. So I thought I would give you an update on the health thing. The other reason I wanted to bring up Mommy Alexander, as you know, love her to pieces. She is probably my best friend. And what happened is that recently we were able to go away for a day to Burlington, Vermont to hang out. And I think I've mentioned this on the show before that we always try to go once a year, usually around my birthday, which is at the end of March. We head off down there, either there or Plattsburgh, New York, to just sort of shop and hang out and swim in the hotel pool and just really sort of enjoy each other's company. And I guess this is the fourth or fifth year that we've managed to do this, and it's actually become quite the tradition and very important to the two of us, and I think especially since she's gone through the cancer. And I remember that when she was diagnosed, you know, with the cancer in August of 2009, one of the first things I said to her after we sort of figured out, you know, what was going to happen and you know, sort of had a bit of an idea as to what the course of the disease was doing and how we needed to treat it. One of the first things I said to her was, Mom, you know, we're going to get through these next 6 months. And then, you know, right around my birthday, we're not going to miss our trip to Burlington. And so, you know, last year, 2010, that was, she'd just come through all of the crazy and she was able, physically and mentally able to come with me and go down to the States. And so again, this year, obviously she's much stronger than she was in 2010. And again, we were able to go down and have a great time. And the reason I wanted to, I guess, bring it to your attention is just because, you know, in this day and age, you know, life happens so fast. Like, I don't know about you, but like, you know, weeks and months just sort of go whizzing right by and you can't believe that, you know, X amount of years have passed by. And I just think that sometimes when you're caught up in your own little world with, you know, your job and the kids and any sort of special activities you've got to do and working out, all that sort of stuff, you just really can take for granted the people in your life and that they're always going to be there. And obviously, when my mom was diagnosed with cancer in 2009, all that sort of stuff came crashing down onto me, you know, realizing just how fragile life can be and that you never know what's going to happen. And I think, you know, it stayed with me in the last couple of years. I don't think about it constantly, but I'm always sort of aware, you know, that you never know what's going to happen. And that's why one of the things that I do, no matter where I am, if it's, you know, me visiting a friend or me seeing my family, when I leave, I always tell that person that I love them. Because you never know. And it's not that I'm morbid. It's just I want that person to know, if God forbid anything was to happen, that they know that I cared about them and that I appreciate their love and support and friendship or you know, being my brother, being my sister, all that sort of good stuff. So I think that's always been in my head in the last couple of years. And again, just, you know, having recently gone on this trip with my mom down to Vermont, we just had such a great time. And it was just so easy to hang out. And we love shopping together. And we get along very well. So I just kind of wanted to bring that to your, you know, your attention, that it's so important to pay attention to the people in your life and the people who mean something to you. And my mom is always there for me in good or bad. I find her extremely wise, and I'm sure that you would feel that way about your own mother or your own father. Usually there's some part of them that you just really aspire to, or you're always in awe of their knowledge and their guidance. And it just was, you know, sort of important for me to sort of bring this up this week because it just really struck me again while we were away on that little mini vacation, how much I love her and how much I need her and how much I appreciate her love and support and guidance. So I will gladly have her on the show, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, if I can actually nail her down in one place and get her to sit and talk with me for a bit so we can give you guys an update. But that's pretty much it. I just wanted to sort of, you know, let you know how much I love my mom and how much I think all of us love our mothers. And with Mother's Day coming up, it's only about a month away. I think it's time to sort of be thinking of our mothers. And then not long after that, you know, Father's Day comes up as well. So definitely keep your parents in your heart and your mind. And for those of us who are fortunate enough to still have them in our lives, please don't take them for granted. And to sort of commemorate all of our mothers, I think the Spice Girls did an awesome thing by writing a song called Mama. So here they are, the Spice Girls on The Kelly Alexander Show.
So bad, I never thought you would become the friend I never had. Join me for a very eclectic and different kind of radio show. It's called The Stuff File Program. Where else would you get to hear a well-renowned Hollywood acting teacher, a best-selling science fiction writer, a guy who teaches llamas how to be golf caddies, or the man who has Hitler's toilet, all wrapped up with some of the oddest news stories around? It's a rhetorical question. There's only one place. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There are various ways to catch the show. You can find it at my website at thestufffile.com. Check out my blog at peteranthonyholder.blogspot.com. Find it at cyberstationusa.com, kdxradio.com, pcjmedia.com, or simply subscribe to it on iTunes. You've forgotten all those places already, haven't you? Okay, just Google the title. It's called The Stuff File Program, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. Catch it, enjoy it, and have a chuckle or two. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Radio will never be the same again.
Bring on the...
Remix.
It's one step at a time.
Look at me, I'm trying. Every day I fall down. Look at me, I'm trying. Every day I fall down. Look at me, I'm trying. Every day I fall down. Make mistakes, get back up, try again. Next time then, save me.
I'm walking, I'm walking, I'm walking. I'm walking, I'm walking, I'm walking. I'm walking, I'm walking.
That's Mary Mary with Walking, remixed by the always amazing Dave O'Day, right here on The Kelly Alexander Show. Well, a big thank you going out to my guests this week, Donna Marie Thompson, as well as comedian Joey Elias. It was so much fun to chat with both of them. Now, next week, we have an amazing guest joining us on the show. His name is Joe Yonan. He's the food and travel editor at The Washington Post, and he's also authored the new book, Serve Yourself, which actually talks about taking good care of yourself in the kitchen, even if that means cooking for one. I think a lot of us, you know, if we're cooking by ourselves or for ourselves,
We just would rather slap a sandwich together than actually take the time to cook a full meal. But Joe sort of points out in his book that, you know, it's important that you take care of yourself. It's not just about cooking for multiple people or your partner. It's about taking good care of yourself, because who would better take care of yourself than you yourself? So very cool. He's going to be on the show next week. Joe Yonan of the Washington Post. Have a fabulous week. Any comments or questions, always appreciated. Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have a great day. You and I'll chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.